is that a guitar behind you?
Me? No, that's my keyboard case.
I was hoping
so
be
it
like
is an instrument.
It is an instrument. It actually is just a case. Actually, the keyboard's over there.
You don't even know how to play a keyboard, do you?
No, no. I just pose with it. Ladies love the keyboard.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for July 11th, 2012. This is Mike Minotti. I am joined by my brother, Edge Guy.
Hello.
And we are also joined by our good friend, Pete Davison.
Hello.
How's it going, Pete? It's been a while.
It's going good, thanks.
And, you know, it wasn't a sincere question, but thank you. All right, Edge Guy, well, how's it going? We got news?
Yes.
All right, then.
yes, we do. All right. Are you doing the whole rundown? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. I was hoping for a little bit more help there than yes. News, we have
it. I have news.
All right, we got news, and then we're going to do a little either-or segment. Then we'll get into our weekend gaming and the releases, and that'll be the show. So I feel like there's a lot of news, right? A lot of shit with them.
Yeah.
It was a crazy week.
All kind of stuff happened.
All right, let's hit it then.
Well, first, let's talk about something that happened in Pete's neck of the woods.
No one cares about what happened in England.
He does. He's right there.
Oh, that's awkward then.
apparently, a European court has ruled that you have the right to like digitally trade and sell your digital games. Pete, did you follow this since it pertains to you?
It's digital software. The court case was some German company was reselling licenses for Oracle, I think it was. Oracle took them to court to say, you can't do that. And the European Supreme Court of Justice, I think it was, said that, well, actually, yes, you can. Which opens up some interesting possibilities for digital game trading and stuff like that in the future. So no one's sort of really quite figured out what it means for gaming as yet, but the could be some potentially interesting stuff down the line with things like what Steam's gift interface currently does. It's like if you could actually trade stuff that's already in your library rather than just stuff you haven't opened yet. So, but yeah, that's the long and short of it. You should be able to transfer licenses for stuff that you have licensed indefinitely. So something you paid money for and you don't have to keep renewing every year. So like a game or something would fall into that category.
See, that's what I was thinking in my head too. I thought of that Steam gifting interface because as it is right now, if you like buy like a bundle that comes with a game you already own, it kind of sits in your gift inventory. Or if there are just certain ways, I think like when you buy those four packs you get multiple copies you could ship off, so yeah, it'd be weird if you could just trade anything in your Steam library.
I'm just shocked that you opened with this story.
I don't know. I went chronologically. I always go chronologically. You know this.
I always tell you not to. But yeah, you know, yeah, it's interesting because of the digital rights and stuff.
Yes.
I just wanted
and the stuff.
You sound thrilled about the stuff. Yeah, you sound really thrilled about it, Mike.
It sounds like a really serious issue, guys. I'm glad that England's dealing with this one. You pioneers.
All right. Anyway, couple quick things I just want to do in the music front. First of all, you can get the extended cut DLC soundtrack for Mass Effect 3 for free, which is nice.
How much music did they actually have to record for that?
16 more minutes of music.
Is it good?
I recall liking it in the game. I just downloaded it. I haven't listened to it yet. I know two of the tracks are just extended versions of existing tracks, but there's actually quite a bit of new music. So there's that, and then apparently Sir Paul McCartney is working with Bungie to write music, I guess. They weren't really clear on what he's doing.
That's so weird.
He was there. There's a picture of him with Marty O'Donnell, and that's about the extent of it.
Why?
Does that mean the frog song in Halo 4 confirmed?
But Bungie's not making Halo 4, so it's for Bungie's...
Yeah, it's whatever Bungie's doing for Activision, so...
Why do they need a Paul McCartney song? Unless it's Beatles shooter...
Activision's got money to throw around. They don't care.
I guess. There's going to be a point, though. Like, someday, Bungie's going to, like, not be as prosperous as they are, and they're going to wish they didn't spend a zillion dollars getting Paul McCartney to record a song for no reason. But, you know, hey, whatever, it's cool.
Yes, yes. Let's see. Then Sega has confirmed Phantasy Star Online 2 for the West in 2013, early 2013.
Yep.
But they didn't say anything about the Vita or phone versions.
No, they're just the PC.
See, I'm kind of interested in the Vita version. I feel like that would be cool.
Right.
I could get behind that.
I don't know. Like, I feel bad because I watched that teaser trailer they put up that's just pure CG, and it's everything I hate. But it just makes me think of how much fun I had playing the original PSO, and I'm like, God damn it, I actually am kind of excited for this.
PSO was great. There's nothing to be ashamed about.
Oh, yeah, the original was great. Universe was absolute dog shit.
I remember a few years back, I wrote an article that basically said that Universe was shit, and I got so much flack for it on the internet. Phantasy Star Online's are fucking scary, man. They are.
Oh, God.
They are, like, crazy. It's like, I'm all for, like, the early parts of the series. They were really cool. But Phantasy Star Universe fans were just fucking scary. It was my, like, first sort of professional trolling.
Man.
And it was like, well, it was like, you said Universe was shit. I hate you. I will end you. It's like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah. This reminds me of this reminds me of the Sonic fans that attacked me when I wrote that bad review of episode 2.
Oh, that was funny. That was funny.
I love the fanboys.
The thing that was objectively bad about Universe, and I hope they address this in Online 2. In Phantasy Star Online, you had like three little shops that were right next to each other so you could buy and sell your three basic category of items.
Yeah.
In Universe, it was like you went to the fucking mall and the three stores you need to go to were in three complete opposite corners. It was just wasted time just running from store to store.
You can't make
it's
an MMO.
Bigger and betterer.
Immersion.
No, it's stupid. And it had jumping. Now, there was a lot of jumping in this teaser trailer, which does have me concerned. Mm. It came out in Japan, right? Like just last week or something?
Well, yeah. I think it's actually out now. It was in beta for a while, wasn't it? But I think it's actually out now.
The basic point is that it needs to be more Diablo, less World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what made it great.
All right.
Okay, so this is hilarious. So Nintendo comes out. And they say, hey, everyone, relax. The Wii U and the 3DS are going to have a unified account system. So you're thinking, sweet, like a username, password, a login, keep track of all my digital stuff. Not so much. The examples they gave were, if you ever need to get your 3DS repaired, you should take it to an authorized Nintendo service center to ensure that your eShop account gets transferred. If your 3DS is ever stolen, they'll restore your account once you've submitted a valid police report.
Why is this so difficult for Nintendo to understand? Why
I don't know.
Is user accounts beyond them?
I mean, I had my Xbox stolen, and you know what I did when I got a new one? I typed in my username and password and re-downloaded everything, and it was fine.
Right.
That's just absolutely insane. A valid police report. I didn't even get a police report for my 360. I think my roommate had it, but I mean, like, what the hell is that? Why don't they get it?
I don't understand. I want to see the Wii U, and I want to see what it does. Because I still refuse to believe that they just don't get it, because it's so easy that they should be able to do it.
Well, exactly.
But they've proven so many times that they don't get it already. And I mean, they've had the whole Wii but, generation and the DS to prove that they can get it right, and they still haven't. So,
but, I mean, the 3DS does some things right. And
some, yeah, but like...
I find it hard to believe that in 2012...
This update isn't even coming till after the Wii U launches, like later for the 3DS.
But the thing is, with the Wii, they didn't need the online stuff. They didn't need it. It would have been great for us, but they didn't need it. I feel like for the Wii U, you have to have that stuff. Like, people expect it. Like, because now everybody who bought a Wii, these are all people who have, like, iPhones and stuff, and they're used to having, like, you know, online accounts and things.
Yeah.
And cross-platform, you know, downloads. And, like, you know, people know how this shit works now. Everybody.
I'm just saying, you know how the Wii U's dead in the water? If the new Call of Duty comes out for 360, PS3, and Wii U, and it has the most amazing implementation of the gamepad that you could possibly dream of, like something we haven't even thought of, but you can't easily play online with your friends, no one's going to buy that version.
Yeah, that'll be kind of the interesting thing is like when the Call of Duty comes out for Wii U and just to see how the online handles that. Then we'll see. All right.
All right, Pete, this should make you happy. Square Enix has said that the Final Fantasy VII PC re-release won't have microtransactions.
Yeah.
Apparently that boost your stats thing is just part of the game.
So it's just a button to say, I can't be bothered to do this.
I guess it's just like basically very easy mode.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
as they said, so that fans can experience the epic story.
No.
Right. Fuck you, Square Enix.
I mean, I'm glad that this is not... Michael, like that was like the scariest thing to me ever.
Yeah,
was the notion that
too.
You could spend money and increase your stats in an RPG. Like,
right.
Like what
to
the
max.
Hell? that is ruining the entire point of everything.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
That feature just doesn't need to be in there though. It kind of undermines the whole gameplay and unbalances it. I mean, yes, it means you can romp through the story, but it also makes any kind of sort of conflict and struggle you've got in there completely meaningless, which you kind of do anyway if you go and do all the side quests and get all the material anyway, but you feel you've earned it. But if you just pressed a button that said cheat, then well, yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Does anyone care that Metal Gear Solid 4 is getting trophies and a patch coming around August?
No, but everyone on my Twitter feed seemed really excited about early on, which I still don't understand. It's like Metal Gear Solid 4 is still there. It's like he's playing it with a fucking checklist to make it any better. Sorry, I'm really angry today, aren't I?
I like that, playing it with a checklist.
No, you don't need a checklist to enjoy a game. Everyone's going, oh, I'm going to get the platinum for it. It's like, yeah, who cares?
What would the trophies possibly be in that game? Watch every cutscene twice?
Yeah, without skipping them. That'd be an achievement.
There should literally be a trophy for not skipping a single cutscene. you would earn that one.
Oh, God.
Do you still have to install every act of that game?
I believe so. You watch Snake smoke a cigarette while you do.
Nice. What a weird game. I kind of love it for it, to be honest, but what a weird game.
Let's see. Activision has announced that they're doing a Walking Dead first-person shooter based off the TV series.
Whatever.
Which is funny since they interviewed... Who's the guy who made Walking Dead? I forget his name.
You're asking the wrong guy.
That guy. In March, he was interviewed, and he said, like, a Walking Dead first-person shooter would be the worst thing ever.
Well, too bad, asshole.
Whoops.
Here we go.
Thanks.
Woo!
The only thing worse than a Walking Dead first-person shooter would be a Walking Dead social game. Oh, which they're also working on.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, at least the Telltale game is good.
Yeah.
I still need to finish the first episode so I could play the second episode, actually. Anyway, Steam has announced an interesting thing called Steam Greenlight. Basically, they're taking the fact that they get like tons of submissions for indie games that people want to see on the platform, but they can't go through them all, and basically crowdsourcing it. So it's kind of like almost what they do really with the Xbox Live indie games, but for Steam, which I think is a great idea. It kind of kills two birds with one stone.
So it's not like I can just say, yeah, I want you to greenlight Half-Life 3.
No. But like, for example, I mean, let's just say some small indie studio has a really cool game idea. They want to get it on Steam. They could put like demos and trailers and things like that into like the Steam Workshop, basically. And if it gets enough votes, then that sends the flag to Steam. Like, okay, this is good. We'll publish it. Basically, to make sure someone's not trying to get like a Mario clone like on Steam, which
right.
is like literally like with the same pixels and everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it was Notch or someone like that the other day was pointing out that people don't have to launch their game on Steam either. They could quite easily launch it elsewhere on the internet, sort of get a fan base going, and then do the green light thing to get it on Steam after the fact. So they don't have to launch it or make it exclusive to Steam or anything. So, but yeah, I think it's a really cool idea.
I approve.
I feel like he's one to talk. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. did you guys see the Kingdoms of Amalur leak trailer?
I didn't see it. I saw that it was leaked. I didn't see much of a point watching a trailer for a game that will never come out.
The game's art style was more stylized than I was expecting, which looked nice. But other than that, there was nothing to indicate that this was going to be anything different from WoW.
I'm sure it was going to be exactly like WoW. I think that was like their point. Probably why their $1 billion studio closed.
Wait a minute, you hear that? Breaking news!
Oh, God.
Oh, man, if you get that reference, good for you. Anyway, Pete, go ahead. You just found something.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, apparently it was just announced that The Last Story, which is the second of the three Operation Rainfall RPGs for the Wii, will arrive in North America on August the 14th.
Huh.
So it was originally set to release this month, so it's been pushed back for some reason that I don't know right now. But, yeah, August the 14th is the new release date now, apparently.
How about that?
I still need to finish whatchamacallit.
You're never going to finish Xenoblade, ain't you?
I might.
I don't believe you. But
I got pretty far.
I'm sure you did. But that's nice. They actually won. They actually got all the games. Wait.
No, this isn't the third one.
No, this is the second one. There's the Pandora's Tower still up in the air.
That's right. There is one more. I thought, okay. Well, you know, Pandora's Tower is always the least important one, right?
It was sort of perceived as that, but it's actually probably the most interesting of the three games. It's the furthest from the traditional RPG. It's a really cool game, actually, and so it would be good to see that make it over, but we'll see, I guess.
The Last Story is the Mistwalker one, right?
That's right, yeah.
So this is the Final Fantasy guy.
Yeah.
Making an RPG.
This is the one that Pete described to me as the Uncharted of RPGs.
Right, it's like a very linear RPG, apparently.
Yeah, it's really linear. It's really short as well. It's about 25 hours. It's short for an RPG anyway. But yeah, it's very cinematic. It's got lots of like really cool set piece combat. It's got a really cool battle system. Yeah, it's a great game with some really good graphics that are really pushing the Wii as well. So it's well worth checking out if you get the chance.
Oh, cool. All
right. Just as Capcom announces that the on-disc characters for Street Fighter Cross Tekken will be $20 at the end of the month, the Tekken guy has come out and says that he will never have paid DLC in any Tekken game or they'll have to fire him.
Yeah, don't make promises you can't keep, Tekken guy.
Well, he might get fired.
It's this is like when Nintendo was bad talking DLC, and now they have DLC. Everyone's gonna have DLC. That's what happens. Yeah, come on.
I don't care if you have DLC, just don't put it on the fucking disc. And $20? That's a lot.
Well, it's a lot of characters. It's like, it's better than having to buy a new game like you did for, Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
The three versions of Street Fighter 4.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, basically.
Yeah.
This is what you wanted them to do instead of those, and now they're doing it.
Yeah.
There it is.
Okay, Mike, I think this is the story you wanted, since you are the expert on it, as it were.
Oh, please.
The Ouya console, which is a $99 Android-based open-source console that launched a Kickstarter yesterday for $950,000, met its goal in less than 24 hours. Right now it stands at about $3
million. Yeah.
Mike, you got to interview the woman behind it. What say you?
Well, they're definitely pretty excited that they got millions of dollars. I can tell you that. They're pretty happy about that. I was really interested in what they're like, because, you know, now they've more than tripled their initial goal, and I kind of wonder what they're going to do with those funds. And I asked them, and basically they said they don't know.
Yeah, they put out an update on their Kickstarter today saying we need some suggestions quick.
Yeah, like, they don't even know, like, oh shit, like we have $1 million.
I'm glad it got funded because I'm interested in this, but I don't know if I was willing to take like a $99 gamble on it being any good.
I would never.
That's the most popular tier that people have gone for. That is like over 18,000 people went for that $99 tier to basically pre-order it.
Right, and
it's because it's running off the NVIDIA Tegra 3 processor, which is in like some tablets. So
right,
like it looks good, but not anywhere near in the level of like a 360s. Or a PS3 running out. I'd say it looks better than a Wii, I guess.
Well, someone pointed out earlier today that both Tegra 4 and 5 are due out next year, so it's going to be outdated pretty quickly as well.
Well, maybe that's what they could do with the extra millions of dollars, is upgrade that chip.
Could be.
That's what they probably should do, because that's what I was going to say. That's kind of the problem is, you know, they talk a lot about how, you know, we're going to have everything from Angry Birds to AAA shooters, and I'm a little skeptical about how AAA you can get on this thing.
Right.
I'm worried that it is going to become a social gaming system, especially with
want everything to be either free to play or at least have like a free trial to it, which I find interesting.
Yeah, It initially said free to play, didn't it? But then it turned out their definition was just you have to have a freely downloadable version, and then you can monetize that how you want. So it could be subscription based, it could be microtransactions, or it could just be pay to unlock the full game. So it's pretty much going to be similar to what we have on phones and tablets, but I guess.
If they could get some of those free to play games, like if you could get Super Monday Night Combat and Tribes Ascend, or you know. It'd be impossible, but like something like a Team Fortress 2, those kind of things you can cross-platform with consoles. That would be a big deal.
Yeah, I just don't see a game like Tribes Ascend coming to a Tegra 3-based system. Plus, it only has 8 gigs of storage, which isn't much for a downloadable-based console. I mean, I'm sure there's like a USB port so you could add more. Maybe they can do that with their extra funds, up the storage, at least to 16 gigs.
Everybody kind of is supporting because they like the idea of an open system. That's really what it's all about. They don't even care about the insides of it.
One of the commenters on your article brought up an interesting point. If it's going to be so open, this could really make it susceptible to malware. You know, hackers getting into the system and doing bad things and all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could be interesting. And like I said, I would never give them $100 right now. Like, I would wait for it to come out. You know, it's going to cost less than $100 when it does come out anyway, so you're spending more than
$99.
You need to. No, it says it's going to be less than $99. She wants to try to make it as cheap as possible.
Oh,
it's
really?
$99 right now, if you do that. But, yeah, so it's interesting. I guess I don't feel
off,
like...
That's
I don't feel
kind
like,
of a cool thing.
I don't feel like playtesting it, basically.
Right.
I want to see how this does. You know, I guess the question really is that, do you guys think this is the future? Like, is it here?
I don't necessarily think it's the future, but I think it's a good idea to get one of the mobile OSs on your TV for people who don't want to get like an Android phone or an Android tablet or something like that. To get Android on your TV allows, say, someone to keep hold of their iPhone and still take advantage of cool games that are on Android as well. So, I mean, whatever you might think of Android as a gaming platform, there are still some cool exclusives on there that aren't on iOS and vice versa. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea overall, but there's been a few critics commenting that they don't believe they entirely know what they're doing or have completely figured out how they're going to handle things like piracy and stuff like that. So yeah, it'll be one to watch to begin with, but yeah, I think early adopters will have some teething troubles to deal with.
I think
I was gonna say at least knowing how open it is, I'll be able to load that thing up with Sega and Super Nintendo, Ross.
Yeah, that's
right.
Kind of the thing. I think what's really interesting, besides like the actual this like the Oya itself, whatever you say, is the support for it. It's kind of a sign that people want something like this, whether or not they're going to want this thing specifically, I don't know, but they want an open system like this.
Mm.
And there's clearly people who are willing to give a lot of money to see it happen.
I also think it would be quite interesting to see if Apple respond to it at all.
Yeah.
I don't think they will. Apple doesn't respond.
Yeah, I'm not sure they will. I think Apple will probably keep a close eye on it and then release something maybe a couple of years down the line, having sort of perfected it, which is what they tend to do, so that they watch and wait and then release something when sort of all those initial kinks have been ironed out. But yeah, maybe not initially, but I think it will be interesting to see, and it might give them a wake-up call about sort of TV gaming.
I do wonder if the big three are watching this at all and what they think of it. I don't know if they're going to respond to it, but I just wonder. You know, they had to be looking at this and seeing the support and just wondering what's going on. All right, that's that then.
Okay. Oh yeah. Let's see. Apparently, the rumor is that the next Batman game will be a prequel to Arkham Asylum, where Batman meets the Joker, and it's inspired by the Silver Age of Batman comics.
Weird. I don't believe it. I don't buy that. That's just too weird. The Silver Age Batman comics. Those are like the that's like the Adam West style stuff, right?
Yeah.
It seems like the whole like thing with Batman Arkham City, Arkham Asylum was that they kind of tapped into the Nolan-esque darker side of it, and that's what people liked it. To do a Silver Age Batman open world game, that seems like, one, a big risk, which is why that's enough to make me believe that they just won't do it. And two, it just doesn't make sense as, like, a prequel, even. Like, just because it's a prequel doesn't mean that it's suddenly takes place in the 60s.
Plus, like, I mean, I still won't spoil what happens at the end of Arkham Asylum, but I'm really dying to see the consequences of that ending, and the DLC they released did not deliver that at all. Like, I really want to see what the world of Batman is like given the events of Arkham City.
I don't... Yeah, this seems a little nuts to me. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Dumber things have happened.
Yes. Okay, so... apparently, in Kotaku, or in the New York Times, Kotaku content is now going to be...
Are you having fun with your Pez toy?
Yeah.
AJ's shoving his Pez Thor into the camera right now to purposely try to distract us, and he thought I wouldn't say something. Well, I'm saying something. Now he just wants a Pez. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, Kotaku reviews and other such content are now appearing in the New York Times, like the print edition, which I found interesting.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know when the last time I read a Kotaku review was. Are they good reviewers?
They do the thing where they basically say if you should buy it, yes or no?
They say yes or no. Them? Kotaku review I read was for Xenoblade, and it made me angry.
See, I don't like that, because that is like the epitome of a product review over like an actual review. Now you're boiling it down literally to yes or no.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, good for them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Final story. Penny Arcade sells out.
It's an appropriate title.
Themselves. Well, that's what they said.
Well, just because they can make fun of themselves doesn't mean that they are not open to criticism.
Yeah, I don't think Mike likes this, but basically the gist of it is they are looking to harken back to the days of when the site was run by donations, and they are looking to crowdfund a year of ad-free Penny Arcade. There's various tiers and stretch goals. The lowest amount would take off the topmost ad on the main page. Then it goes on to no ads on the front page, no ads on the entire site. If they get certain other goals because of the freed up resources they'll have within the company, they'll bring back things like the podcast, do some more projects. Basically, they said they would rather be working for us, the readers, than working for companies who want to advertise. Thoughts?
It's weird. It's weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't quite made my mind up how I feel about this. I mean, it has been pointed out that basically their Kickstarter is pretty much against the rules of Kickstarter.
Yeah,
it's
not a project.
It's not a project because they don't have anything deliverable. They are just maintaining something rather than, well, kickstarting it. So, that's the first thing to consider, I think. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like the idea of ad-free sites and stuff, but I think they're going about this in the wrong way, and they're getting very defensive about it when people are criticizing them as well, which is nothing unusual for them, of course. But, yeah, I don't think they've handled this very well.
I'm still not quite sure how I feel, because like, I, when they used to run the site off donations, I used to give them like $5 a month, because I liked what they were making, and I liked that idea. But I understand, like, on one hand where they're coming from, where they're saying, like, they liked that time period of Penny Arcade because they didn't feel beholden to anything. It would give them more resources to do more things. But at the same time, it's like, they don't need this, even by their own admission. If the Kickstarter fails, then things just continue as they are. Like, I really don't know where I fall on this. I mean, it's not like they're trying to make a buck off of it. They basically come out with the same amount of money on their end either way, it seems. Either they're going to get their money from us or they're getting it from advertisers.
It just seems like a lot of trouble to remove two pretty inoffensive ads.
Right.
For $1 million.
Like, it'd be one thing if it was a site with those ads that like take up the whole fucking screen and jump in front of the article you're reading and the close button is hard to find.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh. Like, Ben Kuchera of the Penny Arcade Report was like trying to start a dialogue on Twitter. He was saying, like, you know, if you use an ad blocker, I'm not going to judge. Just it'd be good if you whitelist the sites you support. And like a lot of people respond to him saying, I use an ad blocker for sites like with bullshit like that. Like the Penny Arcade ads don't bother anybody. I really don't think. In fact, sometimes I actually find their ads somewhat useful because it's usually for indie video games.
They always vet their ads and they always put up things they like. Or half the time it's their own projects anyways. I think the ads right now are for Penny Arcade 3, their video game.
Mm-hmm.
But like that, really, the thing that troubles me is that they are breaking the rules of Kickstarter so blatantly. And I know that there are, like, the projects are, like, the, if we make more money than we plan to. And that's the other thing that irks me, is that this is really a Kickstarter for $1 million. And they set it for $250,000 and said, well, if we get that far, then we'll remove one of the ads, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if this was not Penny Arcade, I'm sure they struck a deal with Kickstarter. Kickstarter knew that this would probably make $1 million, and they're going to get 10% of that. So Kickstarter's like, yeah, sure, we'll allow it. Well, now Kickstarter's going to have to allow this kind of thing for anyone else who says, yeah, we want to fund a year of no ads. It's just weird. I don't know. It would have been better if Penny Arcade, I'm sure they have the resources to do this, did their own crowdfunding thing outside of Kickstarter.
Right. I have to wonder how much of an element of trolling there is in this as well from Penny Arcade, because there are certain commentators on the industry that they seem to enjoy baiting deliberately, and it never ends well. It just ends with arguments and bruised egos all round, and I just wish they'd cut it out.
They've kind of been getting a little obnoxious lately, haven't they? I'm kind of getting sick of King Penny Arcade, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we all have to coward fear, or else Penny Arcade's going to say something bad about us and get us fired or blacklisted or mocked or whatever. It kind of started with that Paul Cristofaro thing. And, you know, he maybe that was a guy who deserved it, but there was a point there where it would have been very easy for someone to take the high road, and instead we had to, you know, sick the dogs on him. So it were. And, you know, you see quotes from Gabe, and you kind of get this impression that he is a bitter person for as much success that he has, and you almost wish he would just be happier. Like, there's like a quote, this is a long time ago, where you talked about, like, oh, I used to get bullied in high school, and now I drive a Ferrari. Like that's kind of not a healthy view to have on life.
No.
It's like, you know, I'm sorry that you got bullied in high school. And now he's kind of taking it. Now he, you know, he's got this sort of power and sway, and I feel like it gets to them sometimes. And I don't, like I said, this Kickstarter is not the end of the world, obviously, because ultimately, if people want to give him money, they're going to give him money. And, you know, there's some arguments that this is money people could have better crowdfunded for smaller projects that, you know, actually need the crowdfunding to actually happen. But I don't know. Ultimately, it's not going to kill anybody or anything. It's just a weird move. It makes me feel kind of icky, and I think a lot of people just feel weirded out by it. Plus, the really weird thing is that it's only 4 years, so this time next year they're gonna have to presumably
do it again. Yeah.
It's weird.
Although I do have to say real quick, they announced their next stretch goal at $325,000. It's a new Automata comic, and I kind of really
like
Automata.
It's kind of weird. Like, those stretch goals are weird to me. It's like they're holding things hostage. Like, that's why, like, stretch goals should not... The stretch goals seem more like real goals.
Well, honestly, you know what I find interesting? They're barely to halfway of their goal.
Yeah, they're actually not doing that well.
I mean,
they're doing okay, but I don't know if it's going to
hit it faster.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are... Because you think, Penny Arcade Kickstarter, you think everybody would get behind that. I think a lot of people aren't that into this. I think a lot of people... immediately think the same thing, like, Penny Arcade is doing very well for themselves. I don't know why I should give them money.
There seems to be quite a backlash against them at the moment as well. I mean, a lot of people who maybe used to read it seem to be losing respect for them now as well. I mean, I can't say I feel particularly strongly one way or the other at the moment personally, but yeah, I can kind of get why some people are a bit disillusioned with what they've become recently.
And I don't want to completely throw them under the bus and say, oh, I hate Penny Arcade now. Because, no, I still like Penny Arcade. I still like what the things they do for the industry. PAX and Child's Play and all. You know, that's still great stuff. It just comes a point where I feel like they're getting to... like, they kind of reached the breaking point, if you will, of how much sway and how powerful they can kind of be and how much they can get away with. And I think they even know that, and they're seeing how far they can go. And maybe they're finding out that this is it. Like, they would kind of have to back off from here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, it's weird. Well, it's icky. I don't like it. But ultimately, I mean, are you guys going to give them any money?
I'm not.
I haven't decided yet.
I'm not. I mean, the thing is, like, and I feel like, oh, I'm not giving them money. I don't support Penny Arcade. Well, fuck that. I bought their books. I bought... their shirts. I've bought a lot of stuff from Penny Arcade. It's not like they don't have people who do support them right now.
Right.
And that's kind of the other thing. It's like, you know, they kind of talk like, oh, all our money comes from ads. Well, no, it doesn't. You have that store. You know, you have these conventions and all these things. There's a lot of revenue coming in besides just ads. But whatever.
Yep. Okay, I'm done with news.
All right, we just got a little either-or segment here. Nothing big. But okay. So what would you guys donate to first, Penny Arcade or Ouya? AJ, go first.
Huh. Well, on the basis that basically for the Ouya donation to be worthwhile, it's $100, and Penny Arcade I could do far less than that. I'd probably do Penny Arcade.
That is kind of one thing I forgot to bring up, though, is some of their rewards or things like, I think the $500 reward is they will retweet something you said.
Yeah.
Or we will follow you on Twitter for a year and pretend to be your friend.
So someone referred to that as social prostitution.
Well, but I mean, for $25, you get a never-before-released digital version of the first Penny Arcade book. That's
it
cool.
Seems like a lot of the rewards
like
are,
that's something
are like I digital. They're almost all digital rewards until like the point where they start flying you out to meet them.
Yeah.
And I think they specifically said they're doing that because a lot of these places, the rewards are almost too good, and they kind of spend a lot of the money they make just on fulfilling those.
Yeah.
All right. So you say Penny Arcade. How about Pete?
If money were no object, I'd say Ouya, because I think it's a more interesting / worthwhile cause. I think like we said in our discussion a minute ago, Penny Arcade is just fine the way it is. Whereas Ouya is something that will need some funding to go forward, and I would be curious to see how it goes. I mean, I'm not going to give money to either of them, but if I had to give money to one of them, it would be the Ouya.
You know, it's real interesting, too. I just noticed this looking at their Kickstarter. They've sold all three of their $5,000 tiers, which is a playdate at Penny Arcade HQ. You have to arrange your travel. They sold one of the $7,500 rewards where you get to intern at Penny Arcade for a day, whatever that is. They sold one of the $9,999 rewards where you have lunch with Mike and Jerry.
Well, they have a lot of super fans who I think are more than willing to shell out that kind of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to say they're taking advantage of them, but they're, you know, taking advantage of them.
All right, what's next?
So what are you more excited for? The next Smash Brothers or PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale character rumble?
PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale.
Okay, why?
It'll play differently, which I think is a good thing, just because, I mean, nothing against Smash Brothers, but it's kind of been more or less the same game since the Nintendo 64.
I think there would be a backlash if they changed that.
I mean, granted, we know next to nothing about what this new Smash Brothers will entail as well, but I think I'm just ready for something that's a little new and different.
Pete?
Yeah, I feel the same way, actually. I mean, I like Smash Brothers Brawl and everything, but I'd like to see something new with some different characters, and I just think although some people say that Sony doesn't necessarily have as strong a library of characters to draw on, I think the sort of diversity of characters they've got will make for quite interesting gameplay, potentially, anyway. So, yeah, I'm with AJ on this one.
Alright, next Batman. Would you rather it be a prequel or a sequel?
Sequel.
Pete.
Having not played the other two, I really don't feel strongly either way about this, so I'll say prequel, really? Just to be arbitrary.
No interest in those Batman games?
I have Arkham Asylum on my Steam list, and I have started it, but I've just never got around to finishing it, and it's not high up on my priority list for some reason. But, yeah, so.
Replay Metal Gear Solid 4, now that it has trophies, yay or nay?
Nay.
I actually haven't played it yet, so I will probably play it at some point. But
not because of trophies.
No, fuck them.
Right. Torchlight 2, yay or nay?
Yay,
yay.
AJ, you didn't do your Diablo 3 rant that you wanted to do.
I could do it now
if you want to.
Do it.
Okay, so the people playing Diablo 3 are really starting to piss me off, and Blizzard's not helping.
Blizzard's because enabling them.
Yes, there's this entitled sense that Diablo 3 should have an end game because buying a $60 game that has a final boss whose name is on the box and playing that game for 100 hours apparently is a giant fucking ripoff. I mean, it's Blizzard's fault for two reasons. For one, well, this one's not so much their fault, but it's the company made World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft had a certain play culture that I think people for some reason were expecting to find in Diablo 3, And that idea was enabled by the idea of an auction house. Because Diablo 3 is... it's a single-player game with really great multiplayer functionality, but it still has a beginning, middle, and end. Right. And a very definite end. You kill Diablo. There's 4 difficulties, there's 5 classes, you can play through all of that. There's still a finite amount of content. It's not like... on Diablo 2, I like went back and like re-beat Diablo a handful of times just to see if I'd find some new items, but it was really just more like a kind of fun curiosity thing. But with the auction house, they've created an infinite economy in a limited universe. And the two just don't match. So the reason people are upset that there's no endgame is because it's harder for them to find stuff to sell and buy in the auction house. If the auction house were gone, 90% of their problems would go away with it. They're not going to get rid of it at this point. They can't. And it's just really pissing me off that people are complaining there's no endgame, and Blizzard's response was not, well, the game ends. It's, yeah, you're right, we have to look into that. What the fuck are they going to do? I mean, they'll release an expansion, that'll add some more content. They're not. It can't be WoW, where you get like new dungeons released. Maybe PvP will help, but that's a ways off, they've admitted themselves. I don't know what's going on. Mm. I don't know why it can't just be a game.
Yeah, just
I have to say, I even get this feeling with MMOs at times. I mean, what is wrong with reaching the end of something?
Yeah, go on to the next thing. You don't have to play the same game forever.
Exactly. Pretty much literally every MMO that comes out, within a few days of it releasing, there will be someone bitching about the fact that the end game is shit. And a good proportion of the population of that MMO either won't reach that point or will take a very long time to get there, by which time they'll have updated it and added some stuff anyway. So, I don't know. This whole discussion just seems to keep coming up, and it just seems so utterly pointless, particularly in Diablo 3's case.
So, in summation, yes, I'm looking forward to Torchlight 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
But basically, because the reason I'm looking forward to is, you know, I thought the first Torchlight was really clever. It brought some nice things to the table that even Diablo didn't do, like the pet.
Right.
It's going to have the multiplayer in it this time, so that'll help it out a lot. It's only $20, and it won't have an auction house.
I'm kind of colliding two things from the show, but I was reading like the Penny Arcade news post today, and Gabe was talking about, Taika was talking about Theater Rhythm, and at one point he referred to a feature in the game as the end game, and I groaned. We need to stop calling things in non-MMOs end games. That's just the game.
Well, I mean, if you're saying endgame in the sense that it's the last thing you do, because that is like you play through all the series in Theater Rhythm and then you start playing Dark Notes,
like
and that
term
is the end game. I know. But a lot of people pervert the word endgame to mean the stuff you do forever at the end that's supposed to be fun for always.
Yeah, right.
Fun for always. All right, so you guys, that's it, actually. No one wins this time.
Okay.
I win, damn it.
Nice. There's no lightning round?
No lightning round. You're good.
Oh.
You're fine.
Congratulations on your victory, Mike.
Thank you, Pete.
It's a pleasure. I hate to see victory go unrewarded.
Are we good gaming? I don't think I played anything interesting.
You played a lot of Theater Rhythm.
I played a lot of Theater Rhythm, which I already talked about, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I like Theater Rhythm. I've been playing a lot of Theater Rhythm in Persona 3 still, so yeah, that's boring. Mm. Next.
I finished the main quest line in Dawnguard.
Yeah, I don't care a whole lot, but you can talk about it a little bit.
Real quick, well, for all the people who are like, oh, there's no new areas to explore, fuck them. The whole, like, last quote-unquote dungeon that you really go through in the DLC is this amazingly huge hybrid of, like, indoor and outdoor dungeon, which they've never really done before in Elder Scrolls. Like, it's a section of outdoor environment that plays like a dungeon, but it's outside. And it was really freaking cool. Like, it was probably the best content I've played in an Elder Scrolls game, honestly. So, yeah. I thought it was awesome. I really liked it. There's still some side quests I have to do that are related to the DLC. You get an awesome item at the end of the DLC, too, and I really like it. I think it was a great expansion.
Cool beans.
Cool. Are we talking Shivering Isles good, or...?
Well, I never got to actually play Shivering Isles, because right when I started it is when my Xbox was stolen.
Oh, no.
So I never actually did go back and play it, which I probably should do someday just for the hell of it, but...
I was fairly sort of on most of Oblivion, but Shivering Isles was really, really good, so it's worth doing if you get a few... hours.
I was really weird because I played Oblivion like this just last year, and I did Shivering Isles first, completely by accident, because like I had the Game of the Year edition, and I was just walking around and I stumbled upon that gate. I was like, I'll go in here. So then like I literally did all that stuff first, then I played Oblivion.
I think I did something similar actually. Yeah. It meant that I was I was crazy overpowered by the time I was doing the Oblivion stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, basically, your enjoyment of this DLC is directly proportional to how much do you like Skyrim. Because it is essentially more Skyrim. I fucking love Skyrim, so I thought that was great. But yeah, it's easily, for me, worth the $20.
Cool beans.
Peter, tell me about the secret world.
All right, I will tell you about the secret world.
Oh, okay. We were just talking about this, and I was wondering what it was.
Right, okay, so the Secret World is, it's a new MMO from Funcom, who made Age of Conan. They also made...
And Anarchy Online,
that's right. They also made The Longest Journey and Dreamfall as well, which weren't MMOs, but were rather brilliant. It's a modern-day MMO that combines sort of conspiracy theory stuff with Templars, Illuminati, and some Asian faction that they made up. And then there's three large adventure areas which sort of have their own self-contained plots, which all the conspiracy stuff goes on top of. So there's a sort of Lovecraft-style area, which is like a creepy little sort of small American town in which sort of evils from beyond the sea are appearing. There's an Egyptian bit I haven't got to yet, and then there's Transylvania after that. So I've played for about 20 hours or so right now, and yeah, it is absolutely brilliant. What it called to mind for me was when a lot of us started playing The Old Republic, we were thinking, oh, this is going to be the next big thing in MMOs. And it was for a while until you realized it was pretty much World of Warcraft in space. The Old Republic was very front-loaded with stuff that made you go, oh, cool, wow, cutscenes and story and stuff like that. But then by the time you got to sort of the second and third dungeons and things, you were just doing the same old things that you'd done in every other MMO. The Secret World is very different in almost everything it does. The only thing that's fairly traditional about it is the combat, which is still sort of hotbar based and so on. But it's more like Guild Wars than World of Warcraft. So you've got a set number of skill slots, so you can only equip a certain number of things at once. So it's
almost like building a deck.
Exactly. Yeah. Like in fact,
okay, I like that.
They call it building a deck. In fact, you have seven active abilities and seven passive abilities.
That is kind of what gets out of control with end game World of Warcraft. At least for me, is like I literally have like seven hotbars, all with things I need to use.
Yeah. Exactly. In the Secret World, you can equip two weapons at once. And it can be any combination of things you want. So if you want to be someone who shoots people with pistols and then goes and punches them in the face, you can do that. If you want to be someone who wields an assault rifle and then sets fire to people, you can do that as well. So, which is pretty cool. And the nice thing about it is that the leveling system, it's not based on experience levels. You just have an experience bar that you gain ability points at a pretty regular rate throughout the game. So at any point, you can basically start learning stuff from another discipline. There's no set character classes. So if you decide that you're not getting on with, say, shotguns or something like that, you can just start spending points on pistols instead and then switch your active skills to pistols instead. Just being limited to the seven active ones at any one time. So although the combat is still sort of standing in place and pressing numbers and things, there's a bit more dodging of active abilities. There's sort of areas of effect appear on the ground so you can dodge out of the way and that sort of stuff. The really interesting stuff comes in the quests and things, though. So all the main quests have sort of introductory cutscenes that they remind me a bit of Grand Theft Auto, actually. So you sort of get like a little sort of episode title comes up in the corner of the screen, and you meet a character and you talk to them, and they give you something to do. And there's three types of quests in the game. There's action quests, which are sort of your more traditional MMO quests that often involve killing stuff, but also often involve sort of finding stuff or locating objects or finding specific routes into areas where the objects you got to find, all the things you got to kill are. So it's very rare you have a quest that you just kill five zombies or whatever. Then there's sabotage missions, which are ones that involve environmental puzzles and stealth. So, for example, an early one in this is you have to go and find surveillance equipment from around the town and sort of procure it for the police and set it up in various strategic locations. So, first of all, you've got to go to the places on the map, actually sort of actually spot where on the buildings these security cameras are and work out how you can reach them. So in some cases that means climbing up ladders and hopping across rooftops and things like that. In other cases they're in sort of more complex locations to actually get to.
Wait, does this actually work?
Yeah. Yeah, it
really.
Yeah, it works really well. Anything that sort of other players could potentially fuck up, like stealth gameplay, they do in an instance mini dungeon as well. So, sort of if you're hunting down someone and they've sort of gone and locked themselves in a lair or something, that bit will then become just yours. So you go into that little instance dungeon and you sneak past their traps and stuff like that. So. Yeah, so those ones are really clever. But the absolute best thing about the game are these things they call investigation missions, which they're basically like little mini adventure games. So you get an objective at the start, and very often the objective will just be something like find X or find information about whatever. And in most cases, it won't give you a marker on the map. So you're just basically left with this objective and a few hints in your journal, and you're then expected to work out for yourself how to, for example, an early one asks you to find out some information about some murders that happened in 2002. So the clue in your journal is that you need to go and find some newspapers with some reports about that, but it doesn't give you a marker where the newspaper shop is or anything like that. So you have to figure out yourself where you're going to find the newspaper archives, search for the right ones, look up the right information. And later ones do things like they test your real-world knowledge, so it will sort of do things like get you translating Latin and Morse code and that sort of thing. Certain other ones will have you looking up fake websites they've set up for the companies in the game. There's an in-game web browser, and you can sort of look up products and employee numbers and that sort of thing and find out information. And, yeah, these quests become really, really elaborate, and the whole sort of puzzle solving nature of it is really, really clever. It's something I've not seen in an MMO before. And the kind of sort of alternate reality game nature of it, I mean, it's not even something I've seen a lot in single player games even. The fact that you actually have to sort of look stuff up on the internet and use your own real world knowledge as much as what your character knows. So that's really cool. And yeah, it's just a very well designed game. It's paced very well. You never feel like you're grinding. There is a fair amount of combat, but if you're interested in sort of the stealth missions and things, you can generally sort of get to where you want to go without being bombarded with zombies every 5 minutes. Yeah, it's a very well designed game. It's really interesting. The community is great. Very early on, they've sort of set up the unofficial rules that you do not post spoilers in chat. So anyone who does post answers to these investigation missions in chat gets ripped a new one pretty quickly.
So the
community on the whole seems to be very mature, very intelligent. It seems to be a sort of a different class of player, a more sort of mature and sensible class of player than some other MMOs I've played. So. Yeah, it does kind of suck that it's subscription-based, but they announced today that they're doing monthly mission packs with new investigations, new sabotage missions, new action missions. In August, they're going to announce two new massive zones for more adventures in. So it sounds like they're pretty committed to making it an ongoing, unfolding experience.
Now, is there... I know it's subscription. Is there any kind of trial or anything?
If you know someone who is playing, they're doing a buddy key thing at the moment where you can try it out for 24 hours. There is also a grace period from people who are in the beta who can download it and start playing without a key attached to their account, but I don't know if that's expired yet. I assume there will be some form of trial in the future, but at the moment all you've got is every player gets one 24-hour buddy key to give to people. So
I'm assuming you gave yours out already.
I've given mine out already, I'm afraid.
See, it's just I was after the game came out, because I honestly didn't know much about it beforehand, but after it came out I did a little bit of reading up on it and it sounded interesting, and hearing you talk about it now actually sounds really interesting, but I'm not ready to go spend $60 on a game that I may not be able to play in a month from now because I don't want to subscribe to it, you know?
Right.
And I mean, that might be, you know, a problem with the current MMO model or what, I don't know. But, I mean, honestly, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, well, either there'll be a trial pretty soon or it'll be free to play in a year.
Yeah, they seem pretty confident about it. Like, the main guy working at Ragnar or Tunquist, or however you pronounce his name, is he seems pretty committed to the subscription model at the minute. But he's sort of backing up with the fact that they are doing these regular content updates. They're adding new community features. They're adding new features for role players and stuff as well. So they're putting in new social areas and stuff as well. So it seems they're really committed to making it sort of the best possible thing. And the community so far seems really happy with what they're doing. It's like often in subscription games, you sort of see people bitching about, I'm paying however much a month for this. But yeah, everyone seems to be pretty happy at the moment with how it's going. So how that will look in, say, a month or two when people are actually starting to have to pay for it is, it might be a little bit different. But everyone seems pretty satisfied with what they're getting for their money at the moment.
Is it global servers or
yes, the server system good. The server system is really cool actually. It runs on one big sort of Uber server.
Like Eve.
Yeah, but you still sort of create your character on they call it a home dimension on there. So stuff is instanced into smaller areas, so there's not massive amounts of lag and hundreds of people running around doing the same thing. So you are in sort of your own area, but you can communicate with anyone on any of the other servers. You can group with people on any of the other servers, and that sort of thing. So it works very, very well.
That's smart. I like that.
And it's global, which is something that there's really very little excuse for MMOs to not do anymore.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if someone wants to send me a buddy key, I'll try it. Hint, internet. Which faction did you join of the three?
I am in the Illuminati.
All right, so that's not the blowjob one.
What? Oh no, that's the dragon from what I've heard. I played a bit of Templars in the beta. They are the English ones. The Illuminati are the American ones, and the dragon are the Asian ones. They each have their own origin story, but then after the sort of beginning of it, everyone is sort of bundled into the same areas, and you then start doing the same quests, and you can group up. There's a PvP element that I haven't tried yet, but for the most part, your faction can be as relevant as you want it to be, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
Alrighty.
Alright.
Is that it? Ready for releases?
I'm good, yeah.
Okay. Go for it.
While
your phone buzzes and rings.
Kind of weird. NCAA Football 13. The Ice Age Continental Drift game.
Oh, I'm sure that's going to be an awesome game.
Conundrum for Xbox Live Arcade and PS3. I didn't know that was going to be a thing.
Pete, I am still going to write that article, by the way.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, that game's great.
I didn't know that was
cool.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, Mickey Mania is out for PlayStation Store.
What?
Mickey Mania, The Timeless Adventures of Mickey Mouse. I didn't know that came out on PlayStation.
What?
When did that come
I have to be a part of this.
When did that come out on PlayStation? Maybe this is a lie, AJ. You can never tell with these things.
That's a cruel, cruel lie.
Let me wiki Mickey Mania and see what the story here is.
Well, finish your releases.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's it. There's some other things. They didn't look very interesting. Mickey Mania. Mania.
I love Mickey Mania so much. I know, there was a PlayStation version. I know that. But I think it was only released in Europe.
Maybe this is only a European thing. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't see
so
anything
cool.
worth looking at it. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us, Pete.
You're welcome.
You can find more of us at ebpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/explodingbarrel and on facebook.com/explodingbarrel. Be sure to go to the iTunes Music Store and leave us a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.